Chapter 21. To flatter this royal pair had one only child, the Princess Angelica, who, you may be sure, was a paragon in the courtiers' eyes, in her parents', and in her own. It was said as he had the longest hair, the largest eyes, the slimmest waist, the smallest foot, and the most lovely complexion of any young lady in the Paphlagonian dominions. Her accomplishments were announced to be even superior to her beauty, and governesses used to shame their idle pupils by telling them what Princess Angelica could do. She could play the most difficult pieces of music at sight. She could answer any one of Agnell's questions. She knew every date in the history of Paphlagonia and every other country. She knew French, English, Italian, German, Spanish, Hebrew, Greek, Latin, Cappadocian, Samothracian, Aegean, and Crim Tartar. In a word, she was a most accomplished young creature, and her governess and lady-in-waiting was the severe Countess Gruffanuff. Would you not fancy, from this picture, that Gruffanuff must have been a person of highest birth? She looks so haughty that I should have thought her a princess at the very least, with a pedigree reaching as far back as the deluge. But this lady was no better born than many other ladies who give themselves airs, and all sensible people laughed at her absurd pretensions. The fact is, as he had been made servant to the queen when her majesty was only princess, and her husband had been head footman, but after his death or disappearance, of which you shall hear presently, this Mrs. Gruffanuff, by flattering, toadying, and wheedling her royal mistress, became a favorite with the queen, who was rather a weak woman, and her majesty gave her a title, and made her nursery governess to the princess. And now I must tell you about the princess's learning and accomplishments, for which as he had such a wonderful character. Clever Angelica certainly was, but as idle as possible. Play at sight, indeed, she could play one or two pieces, and pretend that as he had never seen them before, she could answer half a dozen Magnell's questions. But then you must take care to ask the right ones. As for her languages, as he had masters in plenty, but I doubt whether she knew more than a few phrases in each, for all her presence. And as for her embroidery and her drawing, she showed beautiful specimens, it is true, but who did them? This obliges me to tell the truth, and to do so I must go back ever so far, and tell you about the fairy Blackstick. 3. Tells who the fairy Blackstick was, and who were ever so many grand personages besides. Between the kingdoms of Paphlagonia and Crim Tartary, there lived a mysterious personage, who was known in those countries as the fairy Blackstick, from the ebony wander crutch which she carried, on which she rode to the moon sometimes, or upon other excursions of business or pleasure, and with which she performed her wonders. When she was young, and had been first taught the art of conjuring by the necromancer, her father, she was always practicing her skill, whizzing about from one kingdom to another upon her black stick, and conferring her fairy favors upon this prince or that. As he had scores of royal godchildren, turned numberless wicked people into beasts, birds, millstones, clocks, pumps, bootjacks, umbrellas, or other absurd shapes, and, in a word, was one of the most active and officious of the whole college of fairies. But after 2,000 or 3,000 years of this sport, I suppose Blackstick grew tired of it. Or perhaps she thought, what good am I doing by sending this princess to sleep for 100 years, by fixing a black pudding onto that booby's nose, by causing diamonds and pearls to drop from one little girl's mouth, and vipers and toads from another's? I begin to think I do as much harm as good by my performances. I might as well shut my incantations up, and allow things to take their natural course. There were my two young goddaughters, King Savio's wife, and Duke Padella's wife. I gave them each a present, which was to render them charming in the eyes of their husbands, and secure the affection of those gentlemen, as long as they lived. What good did my rose and my ring do these two women? None on earth. from having all their whims indulged by their husbands, they became capricious, lazy, ill-humored, absurdly vain, and leered and languished, and fancied themselves irresistibly beautiful, when they were really quite old and hideous, the ridiculous creatures. They used actually to patronize me, when I went to pay them a visit me, the fairy Blackstick, who knows all the wisdom of the necromancers, and could have turned them into baboons, and all their diamonds into strings of onions, by a single wave of my rod. So she locked up her books in her cupboard, declined further magical performances, and scarcely used her wand at all except as a cane to walk about with. So when Duke Padella's lady had a little son, the Duke was at that time only one of the principal noblemen in Crim Tartary, Blackstick, although invited to the christening, would not so much as attend, but merely sent her compliments and a silver papboat for the baby, which was really not worth a couple of guineas. About the same time the Queen of Paphlagonia presented His Majesty with a son and heir, and guns were fired, the capital illuminated, and no end of feasts ordained to celebrate the young prince's birth. It was thought the fairy, who was asked to be his godmother, would at least have presented him with an invisible jacket, a flying horse, a Fortunatus's purse, or some other valuable token of her favor. But instead, Blackstick went up to the cradle of the child Giglio, when everybody was admiring him, and complimenting his royal papa and mama, and said, "My poor child, the best thing I can send you is a little misfortune." And this was all she would utter, to the disgust of Giglio's parents, who died very soon after, when Giglio's uncle took the throne, as we read in chapter I, in like manner, when Cavalfier, King of Crim Tartary, had a christening of his only child, Rosalba, the fairy Blackstick, who had been invited, was not more gracious than in Prince Giglio's case. Whilst everybody was expatiating over the beauty of the darling child, and congratulating its parents, the fairy Blackstick looked very sadly at the baby and its mother, and said, "My good woman," for the fairy was very familiar, and no more minded a queen than a washerwoman, "my good woman, these people who are following you will be the first to turn against you. And as for this little lady, the best thing I can wish her is a little misfortune." So she touched Rosalba with her black wand, looked severely at the courtiers, motioned the queen an adieu with her hand, and sailed slowly up into the air out of the window. When she was gone, the court people, who had been awed and silent in her presence, began to speak. "Had an odious fairy she is," they said, "pretty fairy, indeed. Why, she went to the King of Paphlagonia's christening, and pretended to do all sorts of things for that family, and what has happened the prince, her godson, has been turned off his throne by his uncle. Would we allow our sweet princess to be deprived of her rights by any enemy? Never, 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 never." And they all shouted in a chorus, "Never, never, never, never." Now, I should like to know, and how did these fine courtiers show their fidelity? One of King Cavalfier's vassals, the Duke Padella just mentioned, rebelled against the king, who went out to chastise his rebellious subject. "Nigh one rebel against our beloved and august monarch," cried the courtiers. "Anyone resist him? Pooh! He is invincible, irresistible. He will bring home Padella a prisoner, and tie him to a donkey's tail, and drive him round the town, saying, 'This is the way the great Cavalfier treats rebels.'" Apostrophe, the king went forth to vanquish Padella, and the poor queen, who was a very timid, anxious creature, grew so frightened and ill, that I am sorry to say she died, leaving injunctions with her ladies, to take care of the dear little Rosalba. Of course they said they would. Of course they vowed they would die, rather than any harm should happen to the princess. At first the Crim Tartar court journal stated, that the king was obtaining great victories over the audacious rebel. Then it was announced, that the troops of the infamous Padella were in flight. Then it was said, that the royal army would soon come up with the enemy, and then the news came that King Cavalfier was vanquished and slain by His Majesty, King Padella I. At this news, half the courtiers ran off to pay their duty to the conquering chief, and the other half ran away, laying hands on all the best articles in the palace, and poor little Rosalba was left there quite alone, quite alone. She toddled from one room to another, crying, "Countess! Duchess!" Only she said, "Countess, Duchess," not being able to speak plain, "bring me my mutton sop, my Royal Highness Hunji, Countess, Duchess." And she went from the private apartments into the throne room, and nobody was there, and thence into the ballroom, and nobody was there, and thence into the page's room, and nobody was there, and she toddled down the great staircase into the hall, and nobody was there, and the door was open, and she went into the court, and into the garden, and thence into the wilderness, and thence into the forest, where the wild beasts live, and was never heard of any more. A piece of her torn mantle and one of her shoes were found in the wood in the mouths of two lionesses' cubs whom King Padella and a royal hunting party shot, for he was king now, and reigned over Crim Tartary. "Oh, the poor little princess is done for," said he. "Well, what's done can't be helped. Gentlemen, let us go to luncheon." And one of the courtiers took up the shoe and put it in his pocket. And there was an end of Rosalba. IV. How Blackstick was not asked to the Princess Angelica's christening. When the Princess Angelica was born, her parents not only did not ask the fairy Blackstick to the christening party, but gave orders to their porter absolutely to refuse her if she called. This porter's name was Gruffanuff, and he had been selected for the post by their royal highnesses, because he was a very tall, fierce man, who could say at a tome to a tradesman, or an unwelcome visitor with a rudeness which frightened most such persons away. He was the husband of that countess whose picture we have just seen, and as long as they were together they quarreled from morning till night. Now this fellow tried his rudeness once too often, as you shall hear. For the fairy Blackstick coming to call upon the prince and princess, who were actually sitting at the open drawing-room window, Gruffanuff not only denied them, but made the most odious vulgar sign as he was going to slam the door in the fairy's face. "It away, cold Blackstick," said he. "I tell you, Master and Missus ain't at home to you." And he was, as we have said, going to slam the door. But the fairy, with her wand, prevented the door being shut, and Gruffanuff came out again in a fury, swearing in the most abominable way, and asking the fairy either she thought he was a-going to stay at that there door all day? "You are going to stay at that door all day and all night, and for many a long year," the fairy said, very majestically. And Gruffanuff, coming out of the door, straddling before it with his great calves, burst out laughing, and cried, "Ha, ha, ha! This is a good un! Ha, ha, what's this? Let me down, O-H-apostrophe-M!" And then he was dumb. For, as the fairy waved her wand over him, he felt himself rising off the ground, and fluttering up against the door, and then, as if a screw ran into his stomach, he felt a dreadful pain there, and was pinned to the door, and then his arms flew up over his head, and his legs, after writhing about wildly, twisted under his body, and he felt cold, cold, growing over him, as if he was turning into metal, and he said, O-O-H-apostrophe-M, and could say no more, because he was dumb. He was turned into metal. He was, from being brazen, brass. He was neither more nor less than a knocker. And there he was, nailed to the door in the blazing summer day, till he burned almost red hot. And there he was, nailed to the door all the bitter winter nights, till his brass nose was dropping with icicles. And the postman came and rapped at him, and the vulgarest boy with a letter came and hit him up against the door. And the king and queen, princess and prince they were then, coming home from a walk that evening, the king said, "Hello, my dear, you have had a new knocker put on the door. Why, it's rather like our porter in the face. What has become of that boozy vagabond?" And the housemaid came and scrubbed his nose with sandpaper. And once, when the Princess Angelica's little sister was born, he was tied up in an old kid glove, and, Another night, some larking young men tried to wrench him off, and put him to the most excruciating agony with a turn screw. And then the queen had a fancy, to have the color of the door altered, and the painter stabbed him over the mouth and eyes, and nearly choked him, as they painted him pea green. I warrant he had leisure to repent of having been rude to the fairy Blackstick. As for his wife, she did not miss him, and as he was always guzzling beer at the public house, and notoriously quarreling with his wife, and in debt to the tradesmen, it was supposed he had run away from all these evils, and emigrated to Australia or America. And when the prince and princess chose to become king and queen, they left their old house, and nobody thought of the porter anymore. Now Princess Angelica took a little maid. One day, when the Princess Angelica was quite a little girl, she was walking in the garden of the palace, with Mrs. Gruffanuff, the governess, holding a parasol over her head, to keep her sweet complexion from the freckles, and Angelica was carrying a bun, to feed the swans and ducks in the royal pond. They had not reached the duck pond, when there came toddling up to them such a funny little girl. As he had a great quantity of hair blowing about her chubby little cheeks, and looked as if as he had not been washed, or combed for ever so long. She wore a ragged bit of a cloak, and had only one shoe on. "You little wretch, who let you in here?" asked Mrs. Gruffanuff. "Division me dat bun," said the little girl, "me really hungry." "Hungry? What is that?" asked Princess Angelica, and gave the child the bun. "Oh, Princess," says Mrs. Gruffanuff, "how good, how kind, how truly angelical you are. See, your majesties," she said to the king and queen, who now came up, along with their nephew, Prince Giglio, "how kind the princess is. She met this little dirty wretch in the garden. I can't tell how she came in here, or why the guards did not shoot her dead at the gate. And the dear darling of a princess has given her the whole of her bun." "I didn't want it," said Angelica. "But you are a darling little angel all the same," says the governess. "Yes, I know I am," said Angelica. "Pretty little girl, don't you think I am very pretty?" Indeed, as he had on the finest of little dresses and hats, and, as her hair was carefully curled, she really looked very well. "Oh, pooty, pooty," says the little girl, capering about, laughing, and dancing, and munching her bun. And as she ate it, she began to sing, "Oh, what fun to have a plum bun, how I wish it never was done." At which, and her funny accent, Angelica, Giglio, and the king and queen began to laugh very merrily. "I can dance as well as sing," says the little girl. "Can dance." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.